All right, everyone, get ready for this deep dive because we're taking a close look at a case that'll really make you think. Okay, so picture this.
Oh, this is a good one.
Yeah, it's 1962, and we have a young guy, Daniel Taylor, living with his uncle down in Louisiana for the summer. You know, working a job, trying to make some cash. Sounds pretty typical, right? Summer job, hanging out with family.
Right, like a normal summer for a young guy.
Exactly,
yeah.
But... And here's where it gets interesting. He ends up in a car accident.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And what happens next is a total legal whirlwind that ends up dividing the Louisiana Supreme Court.
Oh.
I mean, talk about a summer job taking a crazy turn, right?
Wow. Yeah. That's not how you want your summer to go. So what was it about this specific case, Taylor v. State Farm, that caused so much debate?
Well, that's the thing. It all comes down to something we think we all know. The idea of a household. But as we're going to see, it's way more complicated than it sounds.
Oh, I can see how that could get messy. Legally speaking, household can be a tricky term.
Absolutely. So let's break down the situation, get into the specifics. Daniel, the guy in the accident, he was living with his uncle in Louisiana, working there the whole deal. But his legal residence, or what lawyers call domicile, was actually still with his father back in Arkansas.
Okay, so there's already a separation between where he's physically living and his legal residence. I'm starting to see where the confusion might come in.
Yeah, and that's exactly where the big question arose. The court had to figure out whether Daniel was considered a resident of the same household as his father, according to his dad's insurance policy, you know, for coverage purposes and all that.
Ah, so that's what sent the Louisiana Supreme Court into a frenzy. It wasn't just about the accident itself, but how to define Daniel's household.
Exactly. And you wouldn't believe this, but this question led to not one, not two, but four different opinions from the judges.
Oh.
Can you imagine? Four separate opinions on the meaning of household.
Wow. Four. That's a lot of disagreement for one case, especially for such a seemingly basic concept. They must really have been grappling with it. So what was the majority opinion? What did most of the justices decide?
Well, Justice Hamlin, they wrote the majority opinion, and they really leaned on the concept of legal domicile, especially since Daniel was still a minor at the time. Basically, since his legal home was with his dad in Arkansas and he was just living with his uncle temporarily, the court said that legally he was still a part of his dad's household back in Arkansas.
So even though Daniel was physically living in Louisiana, legally, he was considered part of his father's household because of his domicile. Interesting.
And to back up their point, they even brought up the fact that Daniel's father was still legally obligated to support him financially, which kind of solidified their position that Daniel was, you know, under his father's roof, legally speaking.
That makes sense. They were looking at the legal ties and responsibilities rather than just where Daniel happened to be sleeping each night. But if the court was so split, I'm guessing the dissenting opinions had a very different perspective.
You know, that one of the dissenting opinions, this one by Justice Hamiter, really pushed back against this whole idea of putting so much weight on legal technicalities like domicile. You know, they were more focused on what was actually happening in reality.
Yeah, I can see that. Sometimes a law can feel a bit removed from real life situations. So how did Justice Hamiter interpret the situation?
Well, their argument was that the insurance policy should be interpreted using plain language, you know, what the words actually mean to most people and the reality of what was going on. They felt household should really mean where you're actually living, not some abstract legal concept. So to them, Daniel was living his life in Louisiana.
So eating, sleeping, working, all of that, it was happening in Louisiana.
Exactly. And because of that, that should be considered his household, regardless of what any legal paperwork might say.
So two very distinct interpretations of household, one based on legal ties and the other on physical presence. It makes you wonder how a single word can have such drastically different meanings in the eyes of the law.
Yeah, it really shows you how much wiggle room there can be in legal interpretation. And it gets even wilder because there was another dissenting opinion, this one by Justice Hawthorne, who took an even more strict and literal approach to the whole thing.
Oh, wow. Even stricter than focusing on where Daniel was physically living, what did they focus on?
Well, basically, they said, look, the policy uses the phrase same household. And for me, that means under the same roof, period. End of story. No need to overthink it.
Wow. A very straightforward interpretation. So they felt the majority was stretching the meaning of the policy by bringing in all these legal concepts about domicile.
Exactly. And to them, it was about sticking to the literal words written in the policy.
It's fascinating how different justices can analyze the same case and arrive at such diverse conclusions. It really highlights how one word, like household, can have such different meanings, you know, depending on who you ask, especially when you're talking about the law. So we've got three very different opinions so far on what household means in this case. But didn't you say there was a fourth opinion? A concurring opinion, right?
Oh, yeah, you're right. I almost forgot about that fourth opinion with all these different interpretations flying around. It's easy to get lost in the details. So where did Justice McCaleb land with that concurring opinion?
Well, this is where it gets really interesting, even more than the other opinions. Justice McCaleb, their opinion, it really zeroed in on a key issue in contract law, ambiguity. Their whole argument was that the phrase resident of the same household, it was just way too vague.
Okay, I can see that. It's not the most precise language, is it?
No, not at all. And because of that vagueness, Justice McCaleb argued, the phrase should be interpreted in favor of the person who's insured. So in this case, that would mean Daniel would be covered by his father's policy.
So basically, they're saying if the insurance company wanted to exclude someone in Daniel's situation, they needed to be a lot more specific when they wrote the policy.
Exactly. If the wording is open to interpretation, it's not really fair to, you know, hold it against the person who bought the insurance, right?
I guess that makes sense. It's like you can't fault someone for not following rules that weren't clearly defined in the first place.
Right. And that's a point that has had a lasting impact, going way beyond this specific case. Because of Taylor v. State Farm insurance companies, they had to really take a hard look at their policies. They started to define terms like household and resident in a much clearer way, you know, to avoid this kind of ambiguity.
Oh, wow. So it wasn't just a bunch of legal arguments back and forth. The case had an actual real-world impact on how insurance policies are written. That's pretty amazing to think about.
It is, and I'm sure lawyers still cite this case all the time when these kinds of disputes pop up, even today.
I bet, especially if they're dealing with residency issues or, you know, anything related to insurance coverage. It's like this case gives them all sorts of arguments and interpretations they can use.
Yeah, it's like a legal Swiss Army knife. It gives lawyers different tools they can use based on the specifics of their case.
So it's not even just knowing what happened in the case, who won or lost, but understanding all the different reasoning behind the decision.
Exactly. And the different approaches the justices took.
It sounds like Taylor v. State Farm should be like required reading for anyone in law school.
Oh, absolutely. But you know what? I think there's something in this case for everyone, not just lawyers. You know, I think it shows how important it is to pay attention to those details, those little things in the fine print, especially when you're signing contracts or dealing with legal documents.
Yeah, words matter.
They do. And this case proves that. Even terms that seem simple can have big consequences if they end up in court. It's like, I don't know, it's like playing Scrabble, but the stakes are way higher.
A high-stakes Scrabble game where every word choice counts.
Exactly. But, you know, we've talked a lot about the legal side of this case, but it also brings up some interesting questions about society as a whole, right? I mean, how do we even define household today?
That's a great point. I mean, think about how much things have changed since 1962. Back then, most families fit that traditional model, you know, the nuclear family. But today, it's so much more diverse. You have blended families, multi-generational household, people living in all sorts of intentional communities. You even have folks working remotely from all over the place, like digital nomads.
Exactly. So how do you even apply these older legal concepts to these new ways of living?
Right. It's like the law is always trying to catch up with how people are actually living their lives.
It is, and that's where things get even more complicated. And while this case might not have all the answers, it does give us a way to think about these questions. It makes us think about things like intention, how long someone is living somewhere, you know, dependence, and the types of relationships between people when we're trying to define a household.
It's interesting. The case itself might be over 60 years old, but the questions it raises are probably even more relevant now than they were back then.
I think so, too. We're seeing these issues everywhere now, you know, custody
yeah.
disputes, arguments about inheritance, even where people have to pay taxes. It seems like those old definitions just don't fit anymore.
It really makes you wonder if we'll get to a point where the idea of a household, at least as we know it, just becomes outdated. Will we need completely new legal ideas to deal with all these different living arrangements?
Those are some really interesting questions to think about. It's amazing how a case from so long ago can spark such relevant conversations today. I wouldn't be surprised if legal experts and people making policies are already thinking about these same things.
It really does show you how much the law changes along with society.
And that's what makes it so fascinating. There's always something new to learn, some new angle to consider.
Totally agree. Every case, every legal idea, it's like a puzzle waiting to be solved.
Yeah.
And sometimes those puzzles lead to even bigger questions and a deeper understanding of how the law works in the world.
Mm-hmm.
It makes you realize that what seems like a pretty straightforward case, a summer job, car accident, all that, can actually turn into something so much bigger, you know, legally and even for society as a whole.
It really shows you how the law reflects what's going on in the world and how things are always changing.
Right.
But before we wrap up our deep dive into Taylor v. State Farm, I think it would be great for everyone listening to, you know, take another look at the case themselves, really dive into those different opinions we talked about.
Especially law students, right?
Yeah.
This case seems like it would be perfect for, like, analyzing arguments and debating different points of view.
Exactly. It's a great exercise.
Yeah.
And don't just focus on who won or lost. Pay attention to the specific words used in each opinion, like what their philosophy was, how each justice thought about household. You might be surprised what you discover if you really break down those arguments.
And for those who aren't in law school but, you know, still find themselves reading through contracts and agreements and all that, remember that lesson from Taylor v. State Farm. Don't just skim over that fine print.
Right. You got to pay attention.
Yeah. Those words, they really have power. And as we saw in this case, they can be interpreted in ways you wouldn't expect.
That's so true. It's important to understand what you're agreeing to.
Exactly. Be an advocate for yourself. You know, if something's not clear or doesn't seem fair, speak up.
Absolutely.
And hey, if you ever find yourself really thinking hard about what household actually means, well, you're not alone. Even the top court in Louisiana couldn't agree on that one. And it's a question that'll probably keep coming up as the world changes, you know, how people live and all that.
It really shows how dynamic the law is, always evolving. Taylor v. State Farm, yeah, it might be an older case, but it still has a lot to say about what's happening today, even about the future.
Definitely. Well, this has been a fascinating deep dive. I think we've all learned a lot, not just about the case itself, but about insurance law in general and how the idea of household keeps changing.
Thanks for leading us through this discussion. It's been really thought-provoking.
And a huge thank you to all our listeners for joining us on this deep dive into Taylor v. State Farm. We hope you found it informative. And as always, keep learning, keep asking those questions, and keep exploring all the interesting things happening in law.
Until next time.